69,000 new housing units by 2030. That's the goal the city of Boston has set for itself to alleviate the housing crunch and stabilize rents. The city's well on the road to meet that goal. It's near the halfway point, and that's ahead of schedule. Almost 16,000 of these new apartments will be set aside for low- and middle-income Bostonians. But even as these new apartments come on the market, long-time, often low-income residents are being pushed out of what were once affordable neighborhoods. Today, we have the first in a four-part series about affordable housing in Boston. WBUR's Kainat Khan reports from Eggleston Square in Jamaica Plain.
Alex Pontecapellan grew up in Lower Roxbury near Eggleston Square in the 90s and early 2000s.
I would hang out here, like, summer times, especially as a Latino youth. Most of my friends were in JP.
He's watching the square change, with new construction going up on Washington Street, the main drag of Dominican restaurants, barbershops, beauty salons, and auto body shops. And it's changing in other ways, too. Eggleston has long been a multiracial working-class neighborhood. In 2010, the census tract encompassing most of the square switched from majority-minority to majority-white. The median household income increased. In 2000, it was just under $40,000. Now it's almost $70,000. A third of households have incomes over $100,000.
The first big sign that there was change in JP was when the high-low supermarket became Whole Foods. And that was like, kind of like a market signal. Like, hey guys, the coast is clear, coming on down.
To explain some of what's happening, we have to back up to the 1930s. Eggleston was once a redlined neighborhood. It was deemed a risky investment because immigrants and people of color lived there. So for decades, the federal government didn't underwrite home mortgages and loans there. It led to a self-fulfilling prophecy of distressed properties and blight. In 1960, 2 out of every 5 housing units were considered deteriorated or dilapidated. By a cruel irony, the decades of disinvestment in Eggleston have made it a good investment now. Inexpensive buildings are bought and flipped to cater to higher-income residents.
And now we're greenlighting development, and we don't care what happens to the residents that live here.
Neighborhoods that once had the lowest housing prices have seen them rise at a far greater rate than the rest of the city. For example, the median cost of housing in Roxbury rose 70% from 2010 to 2015, compared with the rest of Boston, where the median price of housing rose 36%. Pontecapellan is now a community organizer at City Life Vida Urbana. He's taking me to one of these flipped apartment buildings.
So, this house, it has 6 apartments, and the landlord came, bought the building, and immediately gave everybody rent increases, which most of the families there couldn't afford.
We arrive at a triple-decker which looks recently painted. When it was purchased, the building had significant maintenance issues. A nonprofit had made an informal offer, seeking to fix up the building and keep the tenants housed without significantly raising the rent. But a corporate landlord had the winning bid and made improvements, including a new roof and modern appliances. The tenants had been paying between $800 and $900 for rent. The company proposed $1,350, although it said the fair market rent was $2,300. A year-long negotiation commenced, after which the company sued. All the tenants eventually agreed to move out.
The folks here had been negotiating for so long. I know this company owns a bunch of property. They're developing all over the place. Really, like, a few $100 is that important for you? And because of that, a few families had to deal with displacement, and some of these families broke up.
My first house is the red one and orange one right there on the corner. And then, well, my first JP house, I should say.
Eric Harrett moved to Eggleston Square in 2011. He's a software developer who was drawn to the neighborhood for its proximity to the Orange Line and for its diversity. He's also watching it change.
The neighborhood is getting a lot richer and a lot whiter. And to me, that is the kind of neighborhood change that makes me very nervous and afraid. By the time I have kids, there won't be a place like JP for them to live in.
When you first moved here, did you worry that you were a gentrifier?
every day. I don't just worry about it. I know that I am. But, you know, the way I think about it, there is not really anywhere you can move to where you're not going to be having that effect. You know, I think most people will try to live in the neighborhood that meets their housing needs. And, you know, as long as we're not building, you're going to be displacing somebody in that process.
Harrit cares about displacement. For him, the only way longtime residents and new higher income arrivals like himself can both live in JP is if there is more housing. The theory that building new housing will address affordability is called downward filtering, and it's the approach Boston is taking. The assumption is that rents are rising because there's a housing shortage, and that means low-income and high-income households are competing for the same limited housing. Creating new market-rate units meets the demand from high-income households. They'll rent or buy these new apartments, freeing up the older housing stock for lower-income households. But the solution is not so straightforward.
You know, it can take quite a while for downward filtering to really have an effect on the market.
Chris Herbert is the managing director of Harvard's Joint Center on Housing Studies. He says downward filtering can take years. In the meantime, rents rise and plateau at a higher level. The issue becomes how to maintain a neighborhood with a mix of incomes while all of this, gentrification, displacement, downward filtering, is unfolding.
Income segregation is a powerful force. What you have to do to counter that is to take positive, affirmative steps to create housing that is affordable across the spectrum, that you don't just leave that to the market.
Basically, Herbert says, increasing the supply of market-rate units alone isn't going to solve the housing crisis. There have to be active efforts to build and preserve affordable housing for a range of incomes.
So let's see. As we come around the corner here,
that's Eric Herrit again, the software developer. We're in the heart of Eggleston Square, facing a development known as 3200 Washington. It stands out from its neighbors of triple-deckers. It has six stories and takes up the width of a block. Herrit supports buildings like this. He's part of a movement called YIMBY, Yes in My Backyard. It promotes higher density buildings in neighborhoods, especially along transit lines.
The real mission of YIMBY is to make it so that instead of renovating all of these old naturally affordable apartments, we have people moving into new buildings like 3200 Washington.
Herrit wants policies that would incentivize building new apartments on land that isn't used for housing, such as formerly industrial land. 3200 Washington is also how Alex Pontecapellan, the City Life organizer, became involved in housing issues in Jamaica Plain. He was part of a group that protested on the proposed site, demanding more affordable housing. It was back in 2015, when the neighborhood was being rezoned to promote more development.
You know, we were out there for a few days in tents, and like neighbors would honk their horns as they drove by, brought us coffee and like donuts and stuff, hung out with us for a little bit.
After more conversations with community groups, the developers of 3200 Washington agreed to build and set aside 18 affordable units, more than the initial proposal. And after years of negotiations over the rezoning, the city agreed to set a goal that 40% of new construction be affordable housing. To meet that goal and other affordability and anti-displacement goals across Boston, the city leverages the same market forces that are disrupting neighborhoods. How does it work? That's tomorrow. For 90.9 WBUR, I'm Kainat Khan.